Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor and read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter. Nope. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or Brazil.
Welcome to Tokens Radio Show, where we talk about all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3. My name's Christy Matthews, joined here with my co-host, Linda Kent and Cameron Walfort.
Good afternoon.
And our extraordinary producer, Travis.
Good morning.
Hey, Travis.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, good morning. Good afternoon.
Oh, yeah, it's afternoon now, huh?
It is.
So feel free to join the conversation by calling into the show at 530-605-4567 or drop a comment in the chat room at kcnr1460.com. Our Telegram channel is t.me/tokensradioshow. And, you know, and that's a good place to go. We curate news all week long, crypto-related news and information, and we put it all on our Telegram channel. It's an easy place to go. We don't put everything we run into over on that channel. It's just kind of relevant information. So if you could go over there and support that, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's another way to get information, you know, if you're trying to get away from Facebook or what, you know, some of those other platforms. It takes a little bit. I'm finally getting used to the way it operates so I can get the information. So,
and we purposely chose not to go with Facebook.
Yeah. And also Christy is a machine. So just having that direct access to her and her wealth of knowledge is priceless.
I don't know about, but thank you. Well, we have a wonderful guest coming on after the break today, and that is going to be really exciting. We're going to be having Rodrigo Rodriguez from Rodrick's Digital. Rodrigo is going to be talking about the work he's doing with the Dash Foundation and the docuseries that he's produced on how he uses crypto exclusively to pay for his travel expenses, meals, gasoline, while traveling on assignment in South America. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and not just South America, but he does travel other places,
too, which
is really cool to find out how he does that.
Yes, so that's going to be a wonderful chat with him. So if you have a topic or recommendation you're interested in, or if you're interested on advertising on our program, please send us an email at tokensrs@protonmail.com. That's tokensrs@protonmail.com. And right now, here's a word from one of our sponsors.
Tokens Radio Show has partnered with Swan Bitcoin, and we've talked about Swan Bitcoin several times. They're great sponsors. You can get a free book. It's called Inventing Bitcoin, the Technology Behind the First Truly Scarce and Decentralized Money. And you can also get $10 worth of Bitcoin when you use our affiliated link. Sorry, I got sidetracked there for a minute. We chose Swan Bitcoin because it's easy and inexpensive. I know it's really user-friendly, and that was a big thing for me. I'm still not, you know, real good at maneuvering around on the different platforms like you guys are. You guys are, as Cameron said, machines when it comes to that stuff. I have a little bit more hard of a time, so Bitcoin is friendly to me. It's perfect for both if you're new or experienced Bitcoiners. So if you want to claim your free book and get your $10 of Bitcoin, go to swanbitcoin.com/tokensradioshow.
Excellent. Well, if you've been paying attention, you know the world is in going through some turbulent times right now. And so, as far as crypto is related, here are some stories that caught our attention. So Ukraine's government has raised more than $10 million in cryptocurrency donations. That's on top of the millions in digital currency donated to non-governmental organizations supporting the Ukrainian military.
That's pretty amazing when I heard that. When you stop and think about it, and it was done like very quickly.
Well, this is how they're doing it. Their official Twitter account of the Ukrainian government on Saturday posted addresses for two crypto wallets, one that's accepting only Bitcoin and the other taking Ether and Tether. And Tether is a token that tracks the value of the U.S. dollar. It's amazing, isn't it?
That's interesting.
That is some crowdfunding.
So all you have to do is have that one address and you could donate money or give money however
you... That's a peer-to-peer donation.
Okay. Awesome. You bet.
So as the overall markets grapple with geopolitical instability, crypto whales are scooping up Shiba Inu in massive amounts. A cryptocurrency analytics firm reports whale activity has increased fivefold compared to normal. The wealthiest of all ETH whales, named Light, bought 49.9 billion SHIB for $1.2 million.
Can I ask if you know what the development was that prompted that, or are you about to say so?
These are just wallets.
What it was, what's going on with Shiba, you knew that is...
I think it's because of the condition of the market.
Okay.
Everything seems to be good buys right now.
Yeah.
Another unnamed wallet that ranks number 12 also nabbed over 55 billion SHIB for $1.4 million. Now, while Whale State... Okay. Untwist the tongue. Whale Stats goes on to reveal that SHIB has returned to the list of the most purchased tokens over the past 24 hours, making it number 8 with an average buy-in of $3,400.
Interesting. I wonder what the big draw to it is, because not financial advice, of course, but I dismissed it quite a while ago. So I am curious what's drawing that much attention.
Because it really doesn't have a use case that we're aware of.
I was going to ask you that. And I wasn't up on it, but I was trying to remember. I heard of a use case in that particular one.
Right. Meanwhile, Block CEO, formerly known as Square, and former Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey is developing a hardware wallet that is natively multi-sig, open source, and combines the convenience of a custodial app with the security of self-custody. In addition, Dorsey's team is developing a decentralized exchange. They've launched their Lightning development kit and have integrated Lightning with the Cash App. Their work is impressive, and soon we can see a compelling new product enter the Bitcoin hardware space. You know, I'm not a big fan of Jack Dorsey, but... I understand that this is quite a development, but anything that man touches, I have to question a motive behind it, just for what went on with Twitter.
Right. I deal with Square, not on those lines, and I'm thinking, now why would Square be getting involved? I mean, we have stories about PayPal. I can tell you stories about PayPal and stuff.
Yeah.
But Square's never been involved with that I know of until this. So.
Right. I will see what happens. California State Senator Sidney Kamlinger, representing the 30th Senate District, which includes parts of downtown Los Angeles, has introduced a bill that would amend the state's code to allow for the acceptance of cryptocurrencies for certain payments. Kamlinger introduced Senate Bill 1275 in the California Legislature on February 18th. The bill proposes authorizing a state agency to accept cryptocurrency as a method of payment for the provision of government services. The modification of the current state law, which allows for the establishment of state agencies to provide services to residents that require payments, would add crypto to the list of acceptable payment methods. Interesting.
Now, I wonder what... I'm sorry, but my brain gets to go...
If it's California, my brain goes to...
It's going to the dump. Over all the agencies, no matter what the service is, I wonder? Or is it going to be particular?
Probably just revenue-generating services.
I mean, could you do, like, your property taxes and stuff?
I think that's going to be one of the primary ones. So the CEO of Tesla, Elon Musk, stated in a tweet that he's currently building a case against the SEC. He goes on to say that he will finish the SEC once and for all. Musk has previously had several run-ins with the SEC, and in 2018, Musk called out the SEC for allegedly shorting the Tesla stock. However, the U.S. federal district judge rejected Elon Musk's attempt to bring the Securities and Exchange Commission before the court in an order issued on Thursday. Musk had alleged in letters to the court this month that the SEC had leaked information about a federal investigation to an unidentified party, harassed Musk and Tesla in a continuous investigation, and neglected their duties to remit $40 million to shareholders that Tesla and Musk had previously paid in fines to settle securities fraud charges. In her order on Thursday, Judge Allison Nathan noted that there was never a deadline established for the SEC to disperse the $40 million to shareholders. But she said Musk could file a motion to set one. And there's more. We're going to be talking about this. And we're on a roll here. Speaking about the SEC, based on recent developments regarding the SEC versus Ripple lawsuit, it appears that the SEC is looking to utilize delay tactics as more evidence emerges that will help turn the case in Ripple's favor. And we're going to be talking more about Ripple right after this report. And Travis, could you play that clip one, please?
As the SEC versus Ripple war rages on, we've seen Empower Oversight truly step up with its Freedom of Information Act request to try and get more details around potential conflicts of interest at the SEC.
About this lawsuit, we do know that some major changes have happened in the last several weeks, some wins for Ripple, a couple of small wins for the SEC, but it does look like the case is very much in Ripple's favor at this point.
When you sue the executives is when you believe they've committed fraud.
Apart from attacking Ripple, the SEC appears to have harassed Tesla and attempted to silence Elon Musk.
Against Ripple XRP.
Well, that feels very official to roll in from. So, real quick, we're just going to do a basic rundown on what's going on with XRP and SEC and maybe where the SEC misstepped. So, well, XRP is the cryptocurrency of developed by a company called Ripple, and it is technically not theirs, as anyone can purchase XRP, and independently of whether or not Ripple exists, XRP will always exist. So XRP was developed back in 2012, if I understand correctly, and it's been traded as a currency since then. And in the time from 2012 to, I think, 2018, they went through various checks and tests to ensure that they were in alignment with not being a security. And from what I understand and from what was just recently released, they had actually been in contact with the SEC during this time to ensure that they were not considered a security. Well, in 2018, the SEC changed their mind and decided that instead of giving them this weird little gray area to operate in, that they would be considered a security and that they had been trading an unregistered security for the past 6 years and decided to come after them. Well, due to the SEC being fully aware of XRP, it, first of all, should have given them a much larger fair notice. Secondly, where XRP should not be considered a security, from what I understand, is while they did sell it and gain money from it, what its ultimate purpose was not to raise money to develop Ripple, and independent of whether or not Ripple exists, XRP still acts as a currency, and that gives it that the underlying technology of XRP is independent of Ripple. So it's by purchasing XRP or by being paid in XRP back in 2012, you weren't being paid in a security or you weren't purchasing a security. What you were doing is exchanging for a different currency. And from what I understand, the SEC just kind of flipped the switch on that in 2018.
So, sorry if I...
Well, you're fine. Go ahead, Linda.
I'm just wondering what would make them change their mind because what do they get out of it? Are they getting money? I mean, what would be the reason that all of a sudden they decided that, no, we're going to make it be securities and you're going to have to report it this way and you're going to have to go by these rules?
I think largely because... First, we have Ripple behind XRP, so there's a big corporation behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than with Bitcoin, it's anonymously made.
Okay.
Something like that. And furthermore, the birth of cryptocurrencies just starting to pop up all over the place. It started around 2017, 18. So to sort of put, make a stand, I guess, to it, to set a precedent, the SEC pursued XRP, but it did so on very poor faith.
Right, right.
Well, here's what's stinky about this and why Elon Musk is also having difficulties with the SEC and just the SEC in general. We're all looking at him with stink eyes, so to speak, is XRP, Ripple Company, did their due diligence to start with.
Yes.
They hired international law firm Perkins Coie. We all know about Perkins Coie. They've been involved with a lot of international things to do with politics, but I won't go down that rabbit hole. But nonetheless, they have expertise in the cryptocurrency space. They wrote letters on behalf of Ripple to the SEC asking for guidance. And they did not get any responses back from the SEC. So, except there was one response after further communications. And so XRP made adjustments. Perkins Coie went ahead and looked at this further, and they said, well, you may have a little exposure, but more than likely not. Without any further guidance from the SEC, basically a nothing burger, they went ahead and proceeded and talked with investors and got this thing going. And several years later, the SEC comes out and finds them. And that's where we're at right now.
And from what I understand, they also had a meeting with two of the SEC higher-ups back in like 4 or 5 years ago. A good bit before this took place. So they got to talk to them and explain their technology. And from what I understand, they asked, so are we a security? And it was just dismissed, and the talk about the tech was...
Ironically about those two SEC executives, they now work for Ripple.
Oh, imagine that.
Did you know that?
No.
So that's what I find... even more interesting that they are working on the defense team for Ripple. So
that is, I mean,
yes, very interesting. So Ripple is saying that that in the SEC the SEC is saying, well, no, those communications to the SEC basically said, Ripple, you knew it was going to be a security. And Ripple's saying, no, we were looking to you for guidance. So there's this back and forth thing going on. But now that their internal documents have been released and are now available for review, it looks as though you can see that XRP was doing the credible thing. They were trying to get guidance and perform the proper steps, and it's not looking good for the SEC right now. It seems to be within the crypto space, there's a large people that's looking at the notion that XRP is going to come out the winner on this.
Yeah.
Which they probably should.
Yes.
Because of the way it was handled.
Right.
I'm sorry, you're coming in after the game, so to speak, and then you're going to tell us how the rules were supposed to be. And because we didn't play by those rules, we're going to fine you or take your license or whatever it's going to be. You know, it kind of reminds me of another agency with the initials IRS. I'm just saying, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway.
Exactly.
But, and that's not right. And it's good to see that this is probably going to go for XRP and not the other guy.
And you see Elon Musk coming out having some similar difficulties with the Tesla stock. it's not crypto, but it seems to be some characteristics that are occurring within the SEC structure.
Yeah, and that's illegal.
But so I think what makes the XRP setup very interesting is one of the things they're coming down on them for is with Ripple, they were paying people in XRP because they were treating it as currency.
Right.
And now what the SEC is trying to say is that they were paying with equity and their shareholders had a right to know where all that equity was going. And the foundation of the SEC's case is that if it's a currency and Ripple is still holding this large centralized amount of XRP that they can dispose of to, for fundraising, essentially, then it still kind of acts like a security for them. But if you make money, I mean, if you're the creator of a currency and you just happen to have the most of it, it doesn't make it less of a currency, I would argue. But right. I think that is the foundation of their argument, weak as it may be, not completely out of the blue, especially if maybe there was someone that was a unnamed whistleblower or something early on, like, oh, I got paid in this and
right.
pissed off they lost value or something. But yeah.
I think what this comes down to is that technology is developing faster than our regulators can create regulation. Our regulators only have so many people on their staff to be able to do as much research. I mean, look how difficult it is just to keep up with everything going on. Mm-hmm. And if you have a big bloated governmental agency with X amount of people working and create regulatory oversight, they're always going to be behind.
Yeah.
And that's basically, I think, a part of what we're seeing right now.
But with saying that, isn't in the crypto world, quote unquote, that is part of why it is what it is. It is for not having regulations.
To a degree, yeah.
To a degree, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so.
You've got to have some referees out there.
Well, yeah, you've got to have some referees, but not ones that are going to be the king, to speak.
Yes.
On this whole thing with securities or no matter what it is.
So the fun thing about it, though, is that crypto, while it is to act independent of regulations, it's also to enforce regulations more firmly. So if I say okay. I paid you $1,000, well, there's versus if I paid you 0.001 Bitcoin or whatever it would be, you can see 100% for sure that my $1,000 in Bitcoin went from me to you, whereas if I hand you $1,000 cash, then there's no record of that. I mean, there's the idea of like, you could write a check and then that can be checked, but there's not a public ledger for that. And
that's true. Yes.
The average person can't go digging into it, whereas, okay, I sent you this XRP and there's even a note on the transaction of what it's for, then you have something that can be disputed down the road, and there's a lot of neat aspects to that public ledger that makes it so people are a little bit more held to their word.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Good points, I have to say.
Well, the judge is going to be holding a pretrial conference in this case this next week, and both sides have agreed to fast-track the litigation with a fact discovery deadline by July 1st, I believe. So the litigation over the 2012 memos will take place later on this spring. So we'll have a copy of the summary of XRP as well as the news snippets that we read a little bit earlier
on Telegram.
Have it on our Telegram channel. Yeah. Yes. So is there anything else you want to add about XRP, Cameron?
Actually, I'd lean more towards SEC, and because in my head this was them hoping to set some sort of precedent so
right.
they could have some authority. And what I'm curious about is where and we don't have time to dig in and speculate, but I'm very curious what their next play in the crypto realm will be if they feel that they have the authority to push something or if this just broke their legs out from under them and something that maybe they should have authority on, they just lost.
Well, I think stablecoins is going to be one of those areas they're very interested in.
Yeah.
I was going to say there's got to be more out there that they're going to be looking at, right?
Plenty, but yeah. I'm just... Maybe they took some of their backbone away from themselves.
All right. Oh. Are we all good? So yep. With that, I think we're going to go to a break. And when we return, we will be talking with Rodrigo Rodriguez from Rodrix Digital. You know, that's kind of a mouthful to get out. So we will see you and him back here in about 3 minutes, guys. See you on the other side.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Oh, I'm a traveling man. Yes, I'm a traveling man. Yes, I'm a traveling man. Oh, I'm a traveling man.
Welcome back. Let's welcome our guest, Rodrigo Rodriguez from Rodrix Digital. Rodrigo is the fund supervisor for the Dash Foundation. He's a cryptocurrency and blockchain enthusiast and crypto news reporter on the Rodrix Digital channel on YouTube. He's a speaker and a master of ceremonies in cryptocurrency conferences. Rodrigo is also the director and producer of the docuseries Venezuela, Colombia, and Switzerland: The Cryptocurrency Revolution. Before we bring Rodrigo out, let's play cut two, Travis.
Located between the Pacific Ocean and the Caribbean Sea, Colombia today sits on a key location regarding the economic crisis in Venezuela. The rise of cryptocurrencies in Colombia comes together with the new Colombian Presidente Iván Duque and his promise that he may cut taxes for crypto and blockchain companies. I'm heading to Medellin. It is the second largest city in Colombia. The city has an estimated population of 2.5 million people. Today, the position of Medellin as a secondary industrial city in Colombia has been one of the main factors in overcoming its crisis of the 1980s and 1990s. The Medellin Metro, a massive urban transport service, became the pride of the city. This city is also known as the City of the Eternal Spring, due to its great weather year-round. And today, Medellin is the base of one of the most active Dash communities in the world. Medellin is also the home of CoinLogic ATM Solutions, proposed owner Edward from Dash.red, Samuel Barbosa, Dash Core Team Developer, and George Donnelly, Dash Colombia proposal owner. My goal today is to go over and see how Colombia went from having one business accepting Dash in January 2018 to over 350 business by the end of the year.
Well, Rodrigo, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you here.
Yeah, it is.
So you just got back from Florida.
Yes, I did. I was. I'm from Brazil, but I live in beautiful sunny Indiana, and I needed to run away from the winter for a little bit.
So it was a pleasure trip, not a business trip.
It was a pleasure trip. That's right.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, we've been talking you up among our friends and on our socials, and we're so excited to have you here.
We are.
You know, it's very hard to explain in words what your docuseries has shown us. Very impressive stuff. Can you tell us how you got, a little bit about your background, because that's very interesting as well, and how your background from that to where you got to working with the Dash Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I was born in Brazil, but in 1995, I ended up participating in one of those exchange programs for students. During high school, I ended up going to live in Slovak Republic. From there, after spending 1 year from a Latino country, going to Eastern Europe, it was a fantastic experience. I came back to Brazil and I decided to, you know, go see the world. I'm like, guys, there's a planet outside there. There's so many things happening. And from that moment on, all I did was basically work to save money to buy plane tickets. From there, I lived in Canada for 1 year, in Holland for 6 months, in Mexico for 6 months, in the U.S. for 6 months. Ended up getting a job on board a cruise ship. I spent 15 years at sea. And for some reason, I guess, I ended up meeting my wife from Indiana, got married, and moved to Indiana. At the same time as being an immigrant for so many years, I came across the difficulty of sending money back to my family in Brazil, and which was almost impossible to send $20, $50 whenever I needed to.
Right.
And one time in 2014, while having a frustrated experience with banks trying to send money to my dad internationally, and it was not even a large amount, it was like something about $100, I came across Bitcoin just by Googling how to send money abroad without using a bank. And I did not understand much about Bitcoin in the beginning, but never sent money using Bitcoin to my dad, because back then, you know, to be able to have my dad open a wallet, download, open an account on exchange, do a swap transaction, receive crypto, and sell for reais, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
But Bitcoin... Yeah, Bitcoin stayed in my mind, and me being a technician as well, working for television broadcasting system for many years, it was quite easier to understand the technicalities of Bitcoin. And being here in the U.S., I ended up getting a really boring job in a cubicle, and all I did was listen to podcasts and YouTube videos about Bitcoin. So that got into me in 2017. I quit my cubicle job because I was basically depressed after traveling the planet and ended up in a boring job. that's how it works, right? And and ended up creating a YouTube channel to talk about crypto, but focus my YouTube channel is in Portuguese, educating people what is crypto, what is Ethereum, what's Bitcoin. And I came across Dash. Dash is the first DAO, what we call a decentralized autonomous organization. It's basically a company that exists only inside the internet, inside the blockchain, mm-hmm. and runs in a decentralized way. And ever since then, all I did was make videos, produce lectures about the whole ecosystem. And in 2018, there was a small community of people dealing with crypto in Venezuela, and they invited me to go there to host a sequence of lectures talking about how Brazil in the 80s and the 90s went through a process of hyperinflation. Brazil, during this time, had five different currencies. Basically, every 3, 5, 6 months, the government will come down and say, listen, inflation is out of control. We got to replace all the fiat, all the paper money around. We got to change the name, cut a three zeros, and reset the financial system. Brazil did that five times in 15 years,
wow.
Trying to fight over 1 trillion% inflation. So Venezuela was kind of going through the same process back in 2018, and the community asked me to go there to host a few lectures about the history of money, how those economic plans from the government was a total failure, basically trying to put a Band-Aid in an open wound surgery. That's how they see to fix the problem. And while I was there to do those lectures talking about economy, as a YouTuber, you know, it's always like, hey, everybody, I'm here with my camera doing a video. And in 1 week, I collect so much information and data and video and photos about business, about the community organized themselves and using a parallel payment system that wasn't controlled by any government or any banking system. And once I got back home, I had about 50 hours of video footage, and I compiled into my experience of leaving U.S., paying my flight tickets, arriving in Caracas, Venezuela. It was a good thing that I had a Brazilian passport, which allowed me easily to access the Venezuela country, as it's an extremely closed country for foreigners for some certain regions. And I compiled it into this documentary. The documentary became a success on YouTube. I did a version in Portuguese and another version in English. And from that documentary, I spoke in over 11 countries in 45 lectures about explaining how is the economic situation of Venezuela and how the community, just by using information from YouTube, social media, were able to use a payment system and protect their wealth using crypto.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, while we're on that one spot that you're talking about, the hyperinflation, and we've gotten into Venezuela, we do have a little clip from your trip to Venezuela that might just be a good time to play that. If you don't mind, it's about a 30-second clip, and I think it might just exemplify what you were just talking about. Travis, would you play clip 3, please?
Hi everybody, Rod here from Dash Digital Cash Brazil. I'm in Caracas, Venezuela, and I'm here at the gas station filling up the tank for one of the guys that's been driving me around here in the city. And just to let you know, 1 liter of gas here costs about 1 bolivar, okay? So right now, if I had to pay for the gas with $5, a $5 bill, she will give me this amount of money as change. And here that I'm holding right now, I have about 75 cents of U.S. dollar. This is exactly the reason why we need cryptocurrency, especially in a country like Venezuela. A stack of money like this has changed. And just to let you know, $1 here in Venezuela, I would be able to fill it up over 200 cars for 6 months. The printing money is out of control, and Dash Digital Cash is present, except in over 300 businesses here in Venezuela, showing everybody why it's important to have a limited cryptocurrency and an excellent ecosystem like Dash to prevent situations like this.
Wow. So, Rodrigo, this is Linda, by the way. I have a question for the people out there that are just beginners or that's not quite understanding how you do this. So Dash is a platform that I can take fiat currency and put towards and then use it to travel with. Is that what you did? Or how did you do that? What were the steps that you took to be able to pay for your airline tickets, the car, your food, your motel, and everything with crypto?
Sure. Dash is actually a blockchain, just like Bitcoin. It's a fork of Bitcoin.
Okay.
But let's understand for people that don't know anything about crypto, what is a Bitcoin, first of all. So Bitcoin, a lot of people try to explain as digital currency, as internet money, virtual currency. Bitcoin is nothing more than a computer program. That's it. Right? It's a computer program. It's a very slow computer program.
Okay.
But different from your cell phone or tablet or laptop, where you have to download an application and install into your hardware. The Bitcoin computer program is already installed inside the internet, and anybody can have access to it. It's a very slow crypto, it's a very slow computer program, but the main difference is that this computer program, anybody in the world is allowed to use, can use, just by downloading a wallet. A wallet gives you access to store your value, your coins in this case, inside the blockchain. It's basically you have a property that does not live outside, but only in the internet. It's the possession that the individuals can have. But again, the computer program is nothing more than lines of code. And you're able to be the owner of a part of this computer program, which is the Bitcoin. That's a basic explanation for people that don't know anything about crypto. But in a global scale, it informs us that we have a computer program, a blockchain, that allows you to have basically a safe, like we used to see on movies, you know, the big door with a thick metal door, and inside you have gold. And the Bitcoin is that. It's just a safe inside the blockchain where you have a combination. And inside you can store your value, your cryptocurrencies. Dash is a fork of Bitcoin based on the same principle where Bitcoin has a limited of cryptocurrencies that will be created, right? There's a limit mm-hmm. of coins.
Right.
In this case, Bitcoin has 21 million coins only. Dash has 18.9 million, but it's a parallel system. It's a fork. Because this is open source, anybody can go there, copy the code, tweak a little bit, and Dash did a few modifications and implement a system where not only the miners get reward, but also the people running the nodes, and has a treasury, allowing Dash to be a self-sustained ecosystem.
And it's primarily used in Latin America, isn't it?
Yes, it became very popular in Latin America because of the self-funding system. So in Bitcoin, every single computer that's connected to the network and it's mining Bitcoin, the miners, once they achieve the mm-hmm. proof of work
right.
or the resolution of several equations and processing transactions, the owner of that computer gets some sort of crypto as a reward, get a coin if he right. achieves the proof of work, right? So for Dash, this was divided into three different layers. So if you have a computer and you're mining Dash, you only get 45% of the new cryptocurrencies mined. A second layer, which is called the master node, which are the computers processing the transactions, mm-hmm. they also split that. They get another 45%, and 10% automatically goes to a treasury system where this money can be used by any member of the community to pay for the salary of developers, marketing, a special team for business development, and other characteristics. And that's where I came in, or communities in Venezuela came in. Anybody can go there and apply to say, okay, I need $1,000, and I'm going to create a project using Dash. And if the master nodes see that there's value in your proposal, they will approve your proposal, and you automatically get $1,000 in Dash automatically into your wallet, and you can use that fund to build your project. And, of course, in the end, you have to put out the report saying, okay, I use this money to pay for this. I make a couple videos. I organize a meetup. I was teaching people how to download wallets, or we pay for this developer to make an integration. And doing so, Dash becomes a what we call a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization. Mm-hmm. It's an organization where you have people mining cryptocurrency, mining Dash in this case. It's also you have another layer, the master nodes processing the transactions, and the treasury is funded by everybody in order to always have money to pay for this ecosystem.
Now, that's the part that you supervise, right, is the treasury fund? or you have some
sort of... I don't actually supervise the treasury, so being on that base, one of the problems as well with this system is that anybody can apply for funds.
I see.
And once you have access to the money, there was not really an entity to say, okay, you must do what you said you're going to do. And in the past, some people actually applied for funds. They took thousands of dollars, and they basically ran away. Because
took the money and ran.
No, basically, there's no system to protect the treasury in order for anybody to take money. So the Dash community ended up creating a foundation out of the Cayman Islands, which is an entity with a bank account, a business address, a director structure, which allows us and the Dash Investment Foundation also present a proposal and request funds from the treasury. And if any other business wants to go there and say, okay, we want to get $300,000 and we promise to do this. In this case, the DIF can step in and say, are you willing to give some equity of your project to the foundation? It's a mechanism to protect the treasury. Mm-hmm. If people don't actually deliver it, the Investment Foundation has legal aspects to sue those proposal owners or business that did not deliver what they promised.
It sounds like you've set a trend for how other DAOs should operate, and that's just it's good because obviously you had people that would take advantage of the funds, and there had to be some sort of governance there. You know, I have a question. I keep coming back. I've watched your Colombia and Venezuela and most of the Switzerland videos. And they're very, very good. And we're going to put those links up into our Telegram channel for everybody to watch. But the thing that really strikes me and the reason for the clips was to exemplify the level of inflation that you encountered in both Venezuela and Colombia. And are you seeing parallels in those countries here in the United States now, and what concerns you about that?
Well, the reality is it's hard to compare directly with the U.S. because both Venezuela and Colombia are very small and weak economies compared to the U.S. But what is worrying lately, the past year and a half, 2 years, due to the pandemic, we had over 45%, if I'm not wrong, of the U.S. total money printed in the past two years.
Yeah, like so $6-7 trillion dollars.
Trillions of dollars.
Yes.
So
yes.
We're not talking about millions or billions.
Yes.
We are on the trillions.
Trillions.
It's just too much money being created by the central bank, by the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank.
Right.
But this money is still not yet circulating in the U.S. It's trapped into several layers of the financial system. But at one point, if this money is offloaded into the common system, everybody is expecting to have a inflation or hyperinflation in the U.S. dollar economy.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why for the continuing of printing is to keep pushing, kicking that can down the road to prevent all of that from coming back. Keep putting it out in the system. It just prolongs it coming back. But when it does come back, it's going to come back with a vengeance.
Yes.
If we see today that the U.S. national debt is about, it's over $30 trillion.
Yes.
Who's going to pay for this? This is not payable easily.
We don't even have GDP that comes close to what we have printed.
Correct.
I think we do $24 trillion a year.
Yeah. What are the solutions? Are we going to default? If the U.S. default on $30 trillion, the world's not going to exist for much longer.
Right.
Because it's going to collapse all the economies globally. In the way I see, the only way to get rid of this debt is by hyperinflationary the U.S. dollar, where the U.S. dollar is not going to be much worth much after a period of time.
Right.
I think we're almost there.
Right.
And there's not a lot of value to the dollar as it sits today. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's especially now today we have
Yeah, you're still with us, Jeff. Okay.
Sorry, one second. I dropped my phone here.
That's okay. As long as you didn't fall or anything, then we're
no,
good.
No, I dropped my phone here and my earbuds came off. Okay. So basically, it's impossible to pay this debt, and the alternative is out there. You have a parallel system that is not run by any bank system or any government, which is the cryptocurrency in general, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dash, and many others.
Right.
And today, the past week, we've seen what's happening with the situation with Russia and Ukraine.
Right.
A lot of misinformation outside there. But now if the European Central Bank, other countries as well, are closing the gates for Russia not to use their own money or use their banking system, this is also being done just recently in Canada.
Right.
Where the Prime Minister decided to have superpower to freeze anybody's bank account. But if you don't have money in the bank and you have money just with crypto, Bitcoin, Dash, Ethereum, this is not possible. This allows any individual to protect their money. Right now we're seeing already massive after the announcement of several countries not being allowed Russia to deal with the SWIFT, the international payment system among banks. People are already running to the banks in Russia trying to withdraw their money because there will be a crisis of liquidity very soon.
Right.
And this can happen here in the U.S. if the system has not enough liquidity and you're not allowed to go to the bank to withdraw money, what's going to happen? And even if this doesn't happen, as I tell people as an example, if we all coordinate everybody tomorrow, Monday, we decided to go to the bank and withdraw $1,000 from your bank account, there's not $1,000 for everybody to withdraw because this money is already digital.
It wouldn't happen. It would definitely
We're already facing a problem between fiat and digital, and cryptocurrencies today is the only solution for people to protect their wealth, not even make money. Forget about
just
trying
to
make money
it.
With Bitcoin, doing trading, buy low and sell high. That's not the goal. It's a system to protect your wealth.
Right.
Well, Rodrigo, we're getting close to the end of the show, and we all want to thank you for coming on and sharing all of your experiences with us. And I have to say, I do enjoy your videos. They're a lot of fun.
Short.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
We could spend another hour with you at least.
But I wanted to ask you, is there anything you want to get out or where people can contact you or get your information and to follow you in your travels? Since, like the song said, you're a traveling man and you're going all over the world. So can you give that information out to the listeners?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at rodrix.digital. I also have a website. My website's only in Portuguese, rodrix.digital, but I am actually translating in English. But anybody can just go to YouTube and look for Venezuela and the Cryptocurrency Revolution. There's several other channels that posted my documentary. There's thousands of views on those other channels. And they can at least watch it and see the slow adoption. And I shot the documentary back in 2018. But they can see the slow adoption of using a digital payment system that only lives inside the internet without any finger from government or bank system. And this is done by the community from the bottom to the top. And this is a huge transformation. Don't see Bitcoin as an opportunity to make money where you gotta use your paper money to buy crypto, and then if the price goes up, you sell your crypto and you go back to paper money.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is the new system.
It sure is.
And we want to thank you again, but they're going to cut us off. We're at the top of the hour, and hopefully we can have you back in the future to discuss some more of your travels.
Thank you, Rodrigo.
Thank you. Have a great day.
But he came to save the day when he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be. He gave us all a protocol this world had never seen. Bitcoin, as you're going into the old blockchain.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.